Radio Prague News. The centre-right coalition government has survived a vote of no confidence in the lower house of parliament. Former Interior Minister Radek Jorn, who is to head a new anti-corruption portfolio in the centre-right cabinet, has threatened to walk out if he is not free to choose his employees. And the head of the Civic Democrats parliamentary club, Petr Tluchot, has defended his position after being accused of scheming behind the Prime Minister's back. The centre-right coalition government has survived a vote of no confidence in the wake of a crippling corruption scandal that led to a cabinet reshuffle last week. In line with the coalition agreement, deputies of the Civic Democratic Party, Top 09 and Public Affairs supported the government with 114 votes. Three deputies who were expelled from the Public Affairs Party during the crisis upheld the no-confidence motion, but the opposition still fell short of the 101 votes it would have needed to bring down the pro-reform government. However, despite the show of unity in Parliament, observers say the government crisis is far from over, and battles are expected to erupt anew over both policy issues and more personnel changes in the cabinet, which the Prime Minister has promised to effect in the near future. The next test of the government's unity is expected in June, when the Nechas cabinet itself will ask the House for a vote of confidence, which it plans to link to several reform bills. The former Interior Minister Radek Jorn, who is to head a new anti-corruption portfolio in the centre-right government, has threatened to walk out if he is not free to choose his employees. Mr. Jorn made the statement in response to a move from Prime Minister Petr Nečas, who said on Friday he would not allow Mr. Jorn's former deputy at the Interior Ministry, Michal Moros, to join the office of the government and work for Mr. Jorn in a new position. Mr. Jorn was forced to leave the ministry over possible indirect links to the security firm ABL, and his right-hand man at the ministry, Michal Moros, was also implicated as a former employee of the said security firm. The Prime Minister countered that he hoped that Radek Jorn was serious about fighting corruption and that he would not change his mind over the choice of one particular employee. The head of the Civic Democrats parliamentary club, Petr Tluchot, has defended his position after being accused of scheming behind the Prime Minister's back. The events surrounding the recent government crisis revealed that he had been meeting secretly with a former head of the Public Affairs Deputies Club, Kristina Koci, in an attempt to change the balance of power in the coalition government and within the Civic Democratic Party itself. Mr. Tluchot was asked to explain his actions behind closed doors on Tuesday in what is said to have been a stormy debate. A vote on whether he should remain in office did not take place, something commentators attribute to the fact that regular elections to the post are due in June. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days should be partly cloudy with scattered showers and day temperatures at around 18 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, on the 20th anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, we recall the impact the accident had on thousands of Czechs. In sports news, the Czech ice hockey team looks to be in good shape for the upcoming World Championship in Slovakia. And in today's feature program, we look at one of Czech history's most audacious and most beloved figures, the author of The Good Soldier Švejk, Jaroslav Hašek. I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. This Tuesday marks 25 years since the shock of the Chernobyl disaster, when reactor 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in the Ukraine exploded, sending previously unseen quantities of nuclear contamination into the air. A radiation cloud spread over Russia and Central and Western Europe, with the first reading of the disaster registered more than 1,000 miles away in Sweden. To date, Chernobyl is still considered the world's worst nuclear accident, leaving whole villages and cities in the area abandoned. What is less known is that in the early 1990s, almost 2,000 ethnic Czechs left their homes in Ukraine over health fears to be repatriated in Czechoslovakia. Jan Wellinger has the details.
25 years have passed since the disaster at Chernobyl, and 20 years since the first group of ethnic Czechs in Ukraine abandoned their homes and property to return to Czechoslovakia. Representatives of the Czech minority in Ukraine handed an application for repatriation to Czechoslovak President Václav Havel during his visit to Moscow in 1990. One of the main organizers involved in their eventual return was translator-turned-activist Věra Doušová. On Tuesday, in an interview for Radio Prague, she recalled how she became involved.
In the 1980s, I worked as a teacher and translator for a fun fair because of the lack of employment opportunities and consequently spent a lot of time in areas of the former Soviet Union. When the revolution came, I never expected to travel to the East again. But by chance, through a contact on the president's trip to Moscow, I eventually became involved with Czech expatriates whose children were dying from leukemia related to the Chernobyl accident. They had petitioned the president.
Věra Doušová says at first the Ukrainian national's chances of repatriation appeared slim, complicated by the fact that during the same period, Czechoslovakia had been trying to negotiate the departure of the last Soviet troops from its territory. Officials reportedly worried that the public, full of anti-Russian sentiment, would confuse both issues. It was after visiting Czech-Ukrainian villages like Malinovka or Malá Zubovskina that Doušová became more active in pushing the expatriates' cause.
I was very pleasantly surprised by what I saw. Small and beautiful villages. The people reminded me of my own grandparents, meeting on the square, speaking slightly archaic Czech, and I told myself I would help. I took part and for more than a year described the situation, including fears relating to Chernobyl, to members of the Czech Parliament. I also wrote articles and spoke weekly on the radio, saying it was necessary for us to help now that we could.
Czechoslovakia's federal government approved a resolution on the return of the ethnic Czechs in October 1990, and eventually the expatriates saw relocation among some 70 municipalities, often in border areas. Not all welcomed the expatriates' return. Gradually, though, 1,860 or so came back. Věra Doušová has kept ties with many of them to this day.
Those interested in returning were able to choose what kind of areas they wanted to live in, whether in more or lesser populated areas, but of course coming back wasn't always easy. Some people here had prejudices towards the expatriates who they considered Russians, but I think on the whole, within a year or so, they won others over to their side. The Czechs from the Volyn area in Ukraine were skilled, spoke good Czech, and I think integrated themselves well.
That was activist Věra Doušová ending that report by Jan Wellinger. With just a few days before the start of the Ice Hockey World Championships in Slovakia, the Czech national team has shown good form. The Czechs beat Finland and Russia at the Czech hockey games held in Brno over the weekend, and although they lost their last game to Sweden, the team's promising performance raises hopes they will be able to defend last year's world title. Jan Richter looks at the strengths and weaknesses of the Czech team.
Jágr! Jágr!
Jaromír Jágr scoring his first goal of the season for the national team against Russia in Brno on Saturday, to the cheers of the sold-out Rondo Arena. The game was the highlight of the Czech hockey games, which the Czechs won despite losing the final match 4-2 to Sweden. The 39-year-old Jágr marked his return to the squad with 2 goals and 3 assists, and had this to say after the game. I trained a lot back in Russia, but I was afraid that I would get out of the routine. But it wasn't that bad, and that's why I played against Sweden as well. At the championships, we'll be also playing one match after another, so I wanted to get into it. Maybe I should have had a rest instead, but I'm glad I played.
The Czechs came out strong against both Finland and Russia. The team's first line, with Jager on the right wing, Roman Červenka in the centre and Petr Prucha on the left, worked well together, and other lines put in promising performances as well. Several other NHL players, most notably Patrick Eliáš of the New Jersey Devils, are yet to join the team, but overall, the Czechs have significantly raised hopes they may repeat last year's gold win. Karel Knap is a hockey reporter for leading Czech daily Mladá Fronta Dnes.
The team looked good. The goalie, Ondřej Pavelec, concentrated well. So I think the goaltenders should be okay. Pavelec should be number one, and he looked like a veteran to me. I liked the way the forwards played, especially the line with Jager and Červenka and Prucha looked good. And also the third line, Voráček, Marek, Rolinek, played exceptionally well. But there may be some problems in the defense.
Coach Alois Hadamčík was hoping Marek Židlický would prop up the team on the defense, but the Minnesota Wild defender recently renewed his knee ligaments injury and might be out of the team. In that case, the coach would probably turn to another two experienced defenders from the NHL, Roman Hamrlík and Jaroslav Špaček. But their club, the Montreal Canadiens, is still in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so Alois Hadamčík might have to do with the players already on the national team. Sunday's game against Sweden showed, however, that on their way through the tournament, the Czechs will have to show team spirit to break through some of the team's tight defenses. Karel Knap again.
The chemistry, the team spirit and the ability to score in the most important moment will decide these games. And Swedes, they are always difficult with their defense to overcome. And in the quarterfinals or semifinals, this kind of game will be played like it was against Sweden. So the Czechs have to be strong mentally and clever and prepared for this kind of game.
The Czech national team will kick off the World Championships group stage against Latvia on Saturday, followed by games against Denmark and Finland.
Many thanks to Jan Richter. To those of you who may just be tuning in, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, broadcasting around the world via satellite and on the internet. My name's Christian Falvey. Later on in the program, we'll have our language learning show Soundcheck. But first, the Czech writer Jaroslav Hašek is best known today for his hilarious anti-war novel, The Good Soldier Švejk. Hašek's own biography, however, is perhaps just as farcical and action-packed as his most famous book. In this edition of Czech History, prepared by Colleen O'Connor, we look at the life and times of this world-renowned author.
One summer evening, Hašek came into our tavern dressed as if he were in his apartment. He was in short sleeves, wore slippers, and held up his trousers with his hand. He confessed that his wife, Shura, had locked up his shoes, suspenders, and coat. He was on his way to the pharmacy. His wife was sick, and the doctor had given her a prescription. In order not to be making a trip for nothing, he'd brought along a jug. Before the tavern keeper had filled his jug and before he'd drunk a glass of beer at the counter, he played pool with us. He came back a week later with a jug of beer, but without any medicine. After all, the medicine was no longer necessary. His wife was in good health again. Too much so, he laughed.
By all accounts, the Nobel Prize-winning author Jaroslav Seifert's recollections of Jaroslav Hašek are typical of the writer, who is famous today for his book The Good Soldier Švejk. The rambling story of a humble infantryman in the First World War, whose natural wit and charm helps him avoid all the carnage without getting into trouble with the authorities. In the time since the book was written 9 decades ago, its protagonist, Švejk, has become a kind of pacifist hero, whose many trials and travails have inspired other writers such as Catch-22 author Joseph Heller and the German playwright Bertolt Brecht. The story of Hašek's own life, however, is possibly even more tragicomic and eventful than that of his most famous character. Hašek was born in Prague in 1883, at a time of rising Czech national consciousness. He was obviously affected by the heady atmosphere of that era, and is known to have participated in anti-German riots in Prague when he was barely 14. He later joined the anarchist movement, and this naturally led to many conflicts with the authorities. He was frequently imprisoned for short periods, and was once jailed for assaulting a policeman. He began eking out a living as a writer and journalist when he was just 17, and was well known, perhaps even notorious, in Prague cultural circles. The translator, journalist and Hašek aficionado Jan Čap, whom I fittingly met in Prague's lively Montmartre Café, where Hašek was once a regular, says that the writer's fame during this period probably had more to do with his legendary drinking exploits and anarchic, slightly surreal personality than it did with any literary prowess.
What I read about memoirs of his contemporaries, I always had a feeling that he was some kind of embodiment of Dada or surrealism, which they were trying intellectually to achieve. So he was quite a legend about cabarets and especially beer houses and pubs around Prague, because he was a very good storyteller and entertainer as well.
Although Hašek quietened down a little at the insistence of his wife Jarmila when he got married in 1910, he was unable to stay out of mischief for very long. He soon reverted to his old habits, and the pair separated a couple of years later. He returned to his old bohemian lifestyle, carousing and boozing and generally getting into trouble. Memorable incidents of this time included getting arrested for pretending to be a Russian spy and being committed to an asylum for feigning suicide by jumping off Charles Bridge. He was to leave Prague for a number of years when he was called up in 1915 to fight for the Austro-Hungarian Empire in the First World War. This experience was to provide him with much of the material for The Good Soldier Fake. Like his protagonist, Hašek was to see little action, as he ended up surrendering to the Russians just a few months after he joined up. Also like Fake, Hašek landed on his feet, and spent much of the rest of the war working in the comfortable office of a prison camp commandant. He remained in Russia for a couple of years after the conflict, and even became a Bolshevik, working as a Soviet commissar in a small town. This is one of the few times in Hašek's life when he gave up drinking, and he actually led an orderly existence for more than 2 years. It seems that he soon tired of this sober life, however, or perhaps his non-conformist personality could not adapt to the strictures of Soviet society. In any event, he turned up in Prague again in 1920, with a new Russian wife, even though he hadn't bothered divorcing his first one. Once back in Prague, Hašek quickly began drinking again, and hanging out in the working-class neighbourhood of Žižkov, in the dubious company of people like the famous anarchist rebel František Sauer. Jan Čap says it wasn't long before Hašek also started getting up to more mischief. This included helping to organise a farcical battle reenactment to celebrate the anniversary of one of the most famous Czech victories under Jan Žižka during the Hussite Wars.
František Sauer, being like the main hero of Žižkov underworld, he organised a 500 years anniversary of reenactment of the Battle of Vítkov, I mean, a very important date. And he organized hundreds of people who put on the swords and they actually sit on horses and they were trying to reenact the battle at Žižkov Hill. But they started in the afternoon, which was a pity because they started very early planning that in the morning. So they were all drunk and actually the Czechs lost in this reenactment. So this is what Hašek was also involved through František Sauer.
Sauer was actually instrumental in getting the first volume of Švejk published, when Hašek began developing the character in 1921. Sauer also played a key role in arranging for the artist Josef Lada to do his famous illustrations for the book, which are now synonymous with Švejk. As Jan Čap recounts, however, the artist was hired in a typically anarchic Hašek fashion.
The Good Soldier Švejk was first published in installments, in a little books. It wasn't like a novel at once. And they needed an illustrator for that. So they decided to invite this young illustrator, who wasn't really a student, but he was not famous. Josef Lada was not famous at the time. And there is a beautiful game they play, these old drinkers. They play with this young guy. They are putting the price, I mean his fee, higher and higher. And Josef Lada remembers how he was really impressed because they were legends already for him. So he was very happy to work for them. And they say, like, František, do you think that half a crown for illustration would be enough? And he said, like, let's make it 1 crown. And they were putting the price up and up, and he never got the money. And he had to pay the bill for that evening anyway.
Although Švejk was a popular success from the outset, the book was not appreciated in some quarters. There were many Czechs who felt his apparent double talk and sneaky evasiveness offered a bad example of the nation's character. Some also felt that the Rabelaisian vulgarity of the novel was not a good advertisement for the newly independent Czechoslovak Republic. Today, however, many Czechs have long since identified with the character of Švejk. And the uncanny ability of this little man to plough his own furrow in the face of overbearing authority has come to be seen as a symbol of their own non-violent resistance to cultural and political domination by more powerful neighbours. Jan Čap says Hašek's wonderful affinity with the Czech language also added to his credentials as a patriot, even though his own sense of Czechness was far removed from the grandiose nationalism of many of his contemporaries.
He could be seen as a patriot, and I believe he was, but definitely not in the way the patriotism was here with sort of flags and national martyrs and sort of redigging the whole history and reinventing. He was mocking that all the life. So I think that he was patriot in the sense that he liked the ordinary little people. He was patriot in that. And he was very good in Czech language, very good ear, and he was playful. I believe that Prague is happy to have a writer as he was. And I believe all cultures have some kind of hero like this.
Like many folk hero writers from other countries, Hašek's attitude to life has captured the Czech public imagination to such an extent that he now embodies something more than a mere literary figure. In the same way in which the Irish love the whimsical iconoclasm of Flann O'Brien, and Americans adore the free-spirited individualism of Jack Kerouac, Hašek's own maverick nature and ironically subversive writings have struck a chord with many Czechs, and he occupies a similar place in his nation's heart. Unfortunately, Hašek paid a heavy price for the life he led, and like the aforementioned writers, he also drank himself into an early grave. Hašek was not yet 40 years of age when he passed away, leaving the last volume of The Good Soldier Schweik unfinished. It's possible that despite his carefree attitude, Hašek may have been aware of his own shortcomings in life. Jan Chap recounts a story that was apparently told by the owner of a pub, which Hašek regularly frequented in his final days.
The pubkeeper usually went to the first floor to bed, and he left Hašek in the bar so that he could draw his own beer overnight, for example. And the toilet was downstairs. And he says that when the pubkeeper went to the toilet downstairs, there was a moment when he could see Hašek at the bar, and Hašek didn't know that he could see him. And sometimes, allegedly, the master was crying. But as soon as he came downstairs, he was very cheerful. So I suppose, like they say about clowns, there were two sides, two faces to this very funny man.
Although there is a lingering sense that Hašek could perhaps have achieved a lot more if he could somehow have reined in his excesses, this final excerpt from the memoirs of his contemporary, Jaroslav Seifert, appears to suggest that Schweik came into being because of Hašek's dissolute lifestyle, not in spite of it. In any event, as Seifert duly notes, like all great writers, Hašek's life was inextricably bound up with his work, and ultimately helped him become the renowned author that we still read today.
He would sit at the corner of a table, and when he'd finished a few pages, one of his pals would take the manuscript directly to the publisher, who would pay out an appropriate amount for the work done, not a crown more, of course. In this way, one day and one evening were taken care of. Then, the next day, he would have to write again, if he didn't want to sit over an empty glass. Given this method of writing, one must ask, of course, how the book would have turned out if he'd written it in peace and comfort at a desk. But this is the eternal, fateful if. Maybe if Hašek had not written on beer-bespattered tables, in the noise of pub talk, among thirsty friends, because he needed a few 10-crown notes for beer, perhaps the book would not have been written, and Hašek would not become the Hašek whose name became famous all over Europe.
Translator Jan Chap there, ending that edition of Czech History by Colleen O'Connor. Topping off our show today is the next edition of our Soundcheck series, where the Czech language meets the language of music, and brought to you on this occasion by Daniela Lazarova.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, in which you can learn new phrases with the help of song lyrics. Today's song is by the group Alkohol and is called Až já jednou budu bohatý, When I Get Rich. The word to listen out for is prachy, which is a frequently used slang expression for money, and the choice is no coincidence. What with the economic crisis and a looming record budget deficit next year, money is the operative word in most conversations these days. Mít velký prachy jsem vždycky chtěl. I always wanted to make big money, but I've given up on that dream. What a life I could have had if I'd been born right. A grand villa, garden, and a fast car in the garage. How come I still don't have them when I work like a dog? The lyrics of the song go, a sentiment that many people are likely to share. If you hear someone called a prachač, then you're looking at a rich man. You can also say ten je v balíku, meaning he's loaded.
je zazobanej, he's riding a gravy train, or ten může penězma vytapetovat byt. He has so much money he can use it as wallpaper, unlike our singer here. Although you likely to hear the word prachy everywhere, the proper expression for money is actually peníze, and there are various ways to say that someone has money to burn. You can say he has peněz jako babek, as much money as he has babkas, babka being a type of mushroom that grows everywhere, or peněz jako smeti, as much money as garbage, in other words, a never-ending supply. A difficult one to explain is peněz jako želez, meaning someone has as much money as bits and pieces of iron around the house. This is an old saying based on the fact that in the old days, people relied on DIY and had boxes of nails, hammers and other iron things around the house. Here's another blast of alcohol. If you want to say a company is making big profits, you say tam se prachy jen točí, money sure turns there. In other words, it circulates fast. People who are aspiring to be rich, like the singer in question, otočí každou korunu dvakrát, turn over every crown twice in their hand before reluctantly parting with it. They believe in the saying, co je doma, to se počítá, money that stays at home counts, or kdo šetří, má za tři, he who saves has enough for three, a saying that the Czech finance minister Eduard Janota, who is pushing an austerity package for 2010, would doubtless put his signature to. And that brings us to the end of today's sound check. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for learning Czech with me, and nashledanou.
Wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we are always glad to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.